This is the Hidden Why podcast, episode 504 with Dr. Linda Wilson. Happiness is a choice. You can choose to be happy. There's going to be stress in life, but it's your choice whether you let it affect you or not. That's a quote by Valerie Bertinelli. Hey guys, welcome to the show. Welcome back. Thank you for tuning in. Today I've got an interview that I did with Linda Wilson, Dr. Linda Wilson from Australia, Victoria, Australia. So it was nice to have a fellow Aussie on the line, and we chatted. We had an awesome chat, a really good conversation. And it begins with the passion and field of expertise that Linda involves herself with, and that is around stress and anxiety. So we start to talk about stress and anxiety and then how it relates to the mind and body and how everything processes from there. And really the build-up of stress and anxiety can get to that point where we just numb and even fall into stagnation. And that takes the conversation on a really cool journey into how we can break free of these patterns, these neurological processes that we seem to be bound to that perhaps we don't want to be. And we talk about, you know, breaking free, really, breaking the habitual chains, using consciousness and awareness, and how practice leads to mastery. We share, and Linda shares a lot of practices in this conversation, a lot of thoughts and ideas of how we can do that, and how, you know, whilst it takes time, like depends on how conditioned you may be or how conditioned that certain experience or habit might be, it does take time to reverse the process, but it can occur. You just have to not give up. You have to continue to have that hope and find that inspiration, find that motivation. And it might be starting from just looking at what things light you up, what brings you joy to your life, what things are you passionate about, and then pursuing those things. So this is a really powerful conversation with Linda Wilson. It goes for about an hour, guys. I hope you enjoy it. If you love it, then please do me a favor. Number one, connect with Linda. The links are at the show notes at thehiddenwhy.com, plus everything else that we talk about there as well. So check that out. And while you're there, why not subscribe if you're not already subscribed to the Hidden Why podcast and newsletter. So subscribe there. And the other thing you can do is share it. So share it with your families, friends, your loved ones. Share the love. It'd be a huge favor and honor if you could do that for us, if you think there's some value in this conversation. I think there is. There's a lot to unpack. There's a lot that we talk about. And really, it's just about, you know, thinking about what you want in your life, thinking about why you want it, what's your vision, and, you know, how do you really want to feel in this life, and what don't you like currently, and then sort of moving yourself away from that in an unselfish pursuit of making everyone else's life better around you. Beautiful conversation. Let me know what you think. Jump onto thehiddenwhy.com, leave your comments in the comments fields there, and we'll talk at the other end. Thank you, guys. Cheers. Let's just roll with it. So, Linda, welcome to the Hidden Why podcast.
Thank you, Lee. I know you and I have been trying to organise this for some time, so it's fantastic to finally be here.
You're a busy woman sitting in your PJs in the district of Melbourne, Victoria.
Exactly. Well, I'm officially in my walking clothes, but I do look like I've just kind of, you know, fallen out of bed. So, you know.
Fair enough. And I am not naked. I am actually in my jumper and jeans. It's cold here.
Oh, Lee, I had a few seconds there where I had a nice image up in front of me, right? So I'm slightly disappointed.
And now the audience might be disappointed because maybe everyone's just been thinking that I've always recorded my interviews naked. But that is not the case, and that's the first time I've informed everyone of that. Let's move on. So, Linda, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us, and I hope you've had a good morning so far. I'm looking forward to our conversation and talking a little bit about your passions and your field of expertise. And you've got a sort of broad variety of backgrounds and experience, I'm sure, but it seems to be stress and anxiety is something that you're very passionate about.
I am. And I mean, there's a reason for that. And that is that, you know, I've always been an anxious type of gal myself and, you know, always really, really curious about how I could learn to do that differently, because anxiety and stress are basically just reactions to what's going on around us and what's going on within us. And if we can manage or find ways to do that differently, then the whole of life changes.
Yeah, okay. So you've had some previous experience there. Are you still sort of stressy and anxious, or have you sort of found ways to deal with that yourself? I guess you have.
Well, I'm human, so I do have those days where, you know, it all hits the fan and, you know, I just think, my gosh, what on earth is, you know, happening? So I definitely still have those experiences. The difference now, though, is that I also have the tools on board, and I'm really, really passionate about sharing those with other people, because I know how difficult it is to live your life not knowing how to manage your internal state.
Yeah, it's sort of aligned with why I do what I do. It's for, you know, really a selfish personal pursuit of trying to figure life out, I guess, and that's why I share what I learn with others on the podcast and speaking with people like you, because I deal with stress as well. I don't seem to as much anymore, and perhaps I've found my own ways to deal with it as well, like you have. But yeah. Certainly I'm interested in learning about what strategies and techniques you use to help other people, because you teach individuals and corporates, don't you?
I do. So my background is in traditional Chinese medicine. So I have always been really fascinated by that mind-body connection and how it is that we can have a thought but our body can be doing something differently, right, or we can have a thought and our body can follow that thought. And traditional Chinese medicine, of course, makes no distinction between our thoughts and our feelings. They are the same, one and the same. So that sort of started me on this journey of finding out, well, how can I use tools? How can I develop my own capacities to understand and then educate others around, first of all, recognizing that they are anxious or stressed, because a lot of people walk around and they just don't feel good, but they don't necessarily understand what it is that they're experiencing in their life. For many people, that state of stress or anxiety is simply a way of being, and
they've just accepted it as something that's normal.
Yeah, well, what happens is we have this capacity to habituate, and what that means is that we hit a certain level and we think that's normal, and then over a period of time that level kind of, if you're talking about stress hormones within the system, for example, if your situation in life stays the same, then what we often do is we slowly creep above that level of what we've become habituated to or what feels normal, and we get to a new level, and then that starts to feel normal. So we do this kind of creeping process, and we get to a stage where, you know, either the body melts down or the mind melts down in some way, because we've actually hit a level that we cannot sustain any longer. And because of my belief system and my traditional Chinese medicine background, I believe that many illnesses are as a result of us not being able to manage ourselves along that journey of stress and anxiety.
Okay, so let's go backwards perhaps and break this apart a little bit. What does this mental or physical breakdown look like that you're talking about?
So there's a number of things that look the same for many people, but there's a number of individual things that individuals can feel or experience as well. So I'm just going to kind of talk across, I guess, the broader banners. So it would be things like feeling that your life has no pleasure in it, feeling as though you aren't in control but something else is, or someone else is, or a certain circumstance is in control. So that sort of sense of, I guess, helplessness or hopelessness in the face of what's occurring in your circumstances. And then, of course, it's things like not being able to sleep, not taking care of yourself physically. So, you know, not showering for a week, or I'm sort of going to the extreme end of things, Lee, just to give people a broad understanding. It's also about not being able to care for others, so not having the capacity to actually be able to do your parenting, for example, or lead your teams the way that you would want to lead them, or lead your business or drive your business the way that you would want to. So we start to lose momentum in our life. We start to lose the ability to feel as though we're actually in control of our life, and rather that life has somehow taken control of us. then there's a whole lot of minor little things that can happen as well, like your memory starts to let you down. You might start putting on weight, for example. You have no desire to connect with people in the same way that you used to do. So there is a huge variety of different things that can be happening for people. But most often, the thing that I see is that people come to me and say, Linda, I just don't know where I'm going anymore. And I don't know how I feel. That's the other big one. I don't know how I feel. So this sort of state of numbness is really something that I see a lot of as well.
I don't know how I feel. That's a scary thought, isn't it, really? And, I guess that's really just the overwhelm that can be a consequence of that build-up of stress within our body and mind.
And what I share with people is that numbness is actually a feeling. It's a way for us to actually manage and cope with what's going on in our life. So, for example, I often get people to use a scale. So out of 10, how numb are you? Are you a 10 out of 10 where you can't sort of feel anything or connect with anyone, et cetera, or are you lower down the scale than that? And often I think it gives people a real sense of relief because they just think that they've lost something when in fact their brain and body are often doing the perfect thing to protect them, or its idea of what the perfect thing to protect them is from the circumstances that are occurring in their life.
So is that just like retreating a little bit, or silence and, disconnecting?
It can be, losing that desire to go out and socialise. It can be losing that ability to have a happy, healthy conversation over the phone even. Now, I'm not saying that us retreating and having downtime is a bad thing. Actually, far from it. We all need those occasions where we retreat back into ourselves, where we have that quiet time, where we put all the technology away, where we just be with ourselves. However, for anxious people, that actually becomes more anxiety provoking.
There's one maybe type of numbness that has purpose and one type of numbness that perhaps doesn't have that much purpose.
Totally. That's a brilliant way for you to describe it, Lee.
Sorry, keep
I just think that's a really great way for you to how many times have we been moving through our life and what we're actually doing doesn't have any meaning for us, but we're doing it because we're on automatic pilot. And often that automatic pilot is driven by anxiety. Anxiety is not the only thing that drives it. Boredom is another thing that drives it. Routine, habits, just the day-to-day requirements of us getting through our life, earning money to pay our bills, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of reasons why we might be just doing stuff with purpose that doesn't still bring us, happiness and fulfillment.
So it's not just stress and anxiety. There's a bunch of reasons why we might fall into that zone or reality, self-created reality, I'd say. But what are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, absolutely. I think that one of the things that I'm really passionate about is staying in the question of what is it that we would like our life to look like? What is it that is actually going to make us feel connected and the driving force in our life? I think we stop asking questions and we keep coming up with these sort of finite answers of this is the way it's got to be and, everybody does it like, therefore so should I. But what that tends to do is it really cuts off a lot of other possibilities or potentials that we might have in our life. It is possible for us to have adventures in our life, but how many people actually do that? And so we disconnect from those things that create passion and excitement and adventure in our life because we do become, one foot in front of the other and this is the way that it's got to be done or this is the way that I have to do it because of my circumstances in my particular life. So is that wrong? Absolutely not. But what I would love to just encourage people to do is sit down and say, well, is this the way that I imagined it when I was a five-year-old child dreaming of my life?
Yeah.
Is this kind of the way that I wanted it to look?
Mm.
And if not, how can you reintroduce some of those things in some way back into your life to make it feel as though, okay, well, yeah, I've got to go to work on Monday or whenever it is, but I'm doing that because at the end of the week I know I'm going to be doing X, Y, and Z with my kids or with my family, or I'm going to climb that mountain, or I'm saving for that trip overseas, or I'm, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so make the connections there, have that sort of broader awareness of why you do what you do.
Absolutely.
So do you think, just sort of wrapping this together, I mean, the result of stress and anxiety, and I mean, these seem to be some pretty dramatic sort of or severe cases of the build-up of stress in our lives that doesn't get dealt with mm-hmm. push us towards that numbness. Is this numbness, is that something you'd sort of relate to as stagnation in life, like just being stagnant?
Could be. I mean, you can also be feeling incredibly stagnant in your life and also be incredibly angry about it.
Yeah, so anger could be another cause for stagnation, but I mean,
absolutely,
obviously multiple causes, but is that, these all lead us to that point where we just sort of fall stagnant, fall numb, where we're just without meaning and almost, you know, like you said earlier, hopelessness, feel like we're without control, to a point where we sort of just give up and we just accept what is and don't push the boundaries anymore.
Mm. I think that most people have one or more experiences of that at various times in their life.
Yeah.
And it's usually at times when they feel like they don't have the power to make different choices. Now, you know, you and I, Lee, we're from a country that hasn't experienced war internally for a very, you know, to any great extent at all. We haven't been impacted by those kinds of things. We have social security. We have, you know, generally safe places for us to live and stay. And I'm not for one minute saying that everybody in the world has access to those kinds of things. So when I make these statements about us saying we all have other choices, I definitely don't want to sound flippant about that. But in many ways, the choice that we ultimately have is to decide whether the way that we are currently feeling is the way that we want to continue to feel. And if not, what is it that we can do next that might possibly change that? Because I think that what happens is, along with the numbness and the stagnation and any of the other emotions that might happen to come up, we give away our responsibility for actually being the driving force in our own life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a tricky one to navigate. How do we steer ourselves out of that? Because it, you know, once you're in that state, yes, I like to think that, you know, it'd be easy to just say, well, look, I know where I am and this is where I want to be, so let's start working that way. But it's really not that easy, is it? Like for people that are in that state and the people that are deep in that state, it's it feels like, yeah, incredibly hopeless. And you know, how do you find that initial sort of motivation to just say, yes, no, I can do it. I can change this. I can change how I want to feel.
And I'm definitely not diminishing those states of real, you know, we're talking here often about depression, you know, is what we're talking about. And people can be completely immobilized by that. But what I would recommend to anyone who's sort of looking for a way out of this particular feeling is a couple of things. One is to recognize that your feelings are not bigger than you, because you right? So too often we feel like this emotion or this feeling that I'm having is way bigger than me. And the reality of that is, no, it's not, because you're actually creating it. And the way that you're creating it is for often all the right reasons, right? Because our brain and our body will do whatever it takes for us to be safe. And often that can be misdirected to don't go out, you know, stay sad, don't connect with people, don't do anything outside of what you're currently doing, because that might put you in some, you know, difficult or dangerous situation, just as one example.
So they're feeling misguiding. Almost.
Misguided feelings and often misguided thinking as well. Right. So that's the first thing. You are not smaller than your feelings or your emotions, because you are creating them. Second thing is, what are you putting into your mind that is not supporting you? So for example, if you are an anxious or stressed person, let's just continue to use that as the example. Are you watching stuff on TV that's adding to that anxiety and stress? Are you listening to stuff on the radio that's adding to your anxiety and stress? Are you putting stuff into your mind that continues to build the state of anxiety and stress? And if you are making those choices, that's a really powerful place to start to make a change. So switch off the TV, stop listening to the news, connect with resources and, you know, flick the channel, go to the nature channel and watch bees creating, you know, incredible honey. Or I know I might be sounding a little bit flippant here, Lee, but, you know, what are we actually doing to take responsibility for how we're continuing to educate and inform our brains?
How do we set ourselves up with those sorry to interrupt.
It's okay.
I'll do that. But how do we set ourselves up in those moments? Because I have those moments. I mean, I think we all do, but and some perhaps more critically than others. But I know what I should perhaps be doing different. I know why I want to be doing something different, because I want to change the state of my being. I want to change how I feel. But yet when I go to that couch to slip and switch on the TV and watch, I don't know, what's the TV programs these days? Big Brother or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than going to a documentary that's going to fascinate me and illuminate the mind, I still go back to Big Brother. You know, it's like that. You know, I know I shouldn't have a drink tonight because it's a school night or whatever it might be, and then you still go, oh, who cares? I'm just going to do it because that's, you know, what you're used to. How do we get out of that? How do we break that chain that we're so used to?
Okay, a couple of things. First thing is, consciousness is key, right? So if you've identified the behavior, or you've identified the feeling, or identified the sensations that your body is going through, and you know that this is where the problem starts. So, let's use alcohol as the example.
Yeah.
You're on your way home from work and you're thinking to yourself, I really want that beer or that glass of wine.
Yeah.
And then you've got the other voice in your head that goes, you made a promise to yourself that you weren't going to do it.
Yeah.
So we have to hear these little voices inside our head, right? And then what we have to do is do something differently. And this is where the consciousness part of it is absolutely key. So we have to remain conscious to the sneaky little voices that are going on. The one that says, oh, give up, you know, just have one glass or one bottle.
And those sneaky little voices are quick to just win the battle too, aren't they?
Absolutely. And again, this is our brain trying to keep us inside a little box of you know, recognized and understood behaviors, because we're safe even when we're not. It tries to keep us there. So first thing is consciousness. The second thing is practice. And there is no other way around it than you have to keep on interrupting the voices, the thoughts and the feelings. I teach people a number of different tools to do that, but it comes back to, you know, why are you making the choice to have a change? And how are you developing your connection to that reason? How are you powerfully enhancing that reason that you have come up with to make a change in your life?
Yeah.
And what are you doing to continue to build your foundations for that change? Because there's a couple of things that happen here. One is, our brain is going to freak out, because we're doing something different, because we're actually, you know, taking responsibility for ourselves where previously we may have been on autopilot. Second, lots of times the people around us are going to freak out, because, you know, everybody likes to know that mum or dad or their work colleague, they operate in a certain way, they think that they understand you, and that all makes us feel safe and in our little, you know, cozy little understandings of each other. And you have to be prepared for all of that. However, in the moment, consciousness has to be the thing that is practiced so that you can interrupt yourself. You know, people have heard about pattern interruption, and just a really simple pattern interruption is, instead of doing the thing that you think you want to do or that you're, you know, reaching for or whatever it is, go for a walk. And if you can't go for a walk, do 20 star jumps. And if you can't do 20 star jumps, do a headstand. And if you can't do that, come up with something else crazy, wacky, and wonderful that might just interrupt that pattern so that you give yourself an extra half an hour to talk yourself out of doing whatever you were going to do. And is it easy? No, it's not easy. It really takes, you know, that conscious effort of putting the tools in place to break the patterning. Because remembering here, Lee, that we are actually changing our neural network when we do these things. And one of the reasons that habits are so hard to change or alter is because we have built up a neural network that actually supports it. So our thinking flows in one direction, and it flows there very powerfully because we've practiced that thinking so often. And when we try to re-divert the resources that flow down those neural pathways and send them somewhere else, the brain itself objects. It goes like, I don't want to do extra work. You're making me do extra work. Let's just flow in this direction. We've been doing that for 10 years. Why do we want to do anything different? So we're not only talking about our emotional reaction to change, we're talking about a physiological reaction to, or a neurological reaction to change as well. Yeah.
I always like the It's an analogy I heard many years ago about, you know, you're driving along the highway and then suddenly you decide, no, this isn't feeling good anymore, I'm going to go somewhere else. And then you have to venture off and you have to go through the forest. And to get through the forest, you have to sort of blaze this new trail. And, you know, what it's like walking through a forest. It's difficult, it's ugly, it's itchy, it's hot, and it's just not pleasant. And so we soon enough get back on that highway again. Screw this, I'm just going to continue with this highway.
And
I just love that, and that really helped me when I wanted to make some changes to some of the habits that I didn't love in my life.
I love it. It's a great way to describe it. And, you know, the other thing that happens when we're walking through the forest is we're absolutely scared, you know, poo-less, that we're going to lose our way and never be able to find that highway again. So there are powerful drivers to keep us locked into our existing habits, thoughts, feelings, and emotions. And, you know, a big part of what I am so passionate about in my life is just really educating people around, there are things you can do. You know, to a large extent, many of us have surrendered to this concept of, well, what can I do about it? It's over for me, or I can't change it now. I've been doing it for so long, it can never be different. And I really encourage people to get out there and find resources. Like, most of us now can jump online and do some kind of a search for resources of some kind to help us create a change. And the other thing is, when you fall off the horse, don't throw everything down the drain.
Yeah.
Get back up.
Yeah.
The more often you get back up, the more often you're interrupting, you know, what we were describing before, that neurological patterning that we've built up over so many years.
Yeah, I think sometimes you have to, you know, fall off the wagon to get back on track. And I think it comes back to just reminding yourself why you wanted to leave that highway in the first place. You know, what was it that you didn't like about it? And say, okay, well, why am I so scared of going on this new adventure then and onto these new, you know, unblazed trails to this new life? I mean, it's because I didn't want that other path. And who cares where this leads me? It's uncertain, it's scary, but hey, I'm learning stuff and it's changing me and it's keeping me away from that state that I didn't like. So sometimes it's a good reminder, I think, to go back there and go, yeah, actually, this is why I didn't want to do it, and then get back on, you know, get back into practice again.
Absolutely. And sometimes those, you know, those negative experiences when we lose track or we revert back, sometimes those experiences can be very painful, and that becomes a more powerful motivator, right? So rather than using, say, you know, falling out of your new habit as an excuse to get straight back into continuing those bad habits, we can actually look at the contrast. You know what? I was feeling great when I was walking every day. I was feeling fantastic when I put good food into my mouth and when I took my time and really appreciated it. I was feeling great when I made sure I read a book to my kids every night. because, you know, a major thing in my life is making sure that I connect with my children. And when we stop those things, we can see quite a stark contrast between how connected we feel in our life and how in control we feel in our life compared to not so much.
Yeah, and that's really the thing that can help us in the future going forward overcome those feelings that might tempt us or sway us the other way, which is where we don't want to turn. And I think that's powerful because when you have those feelings, that sort of that voice inside your head that says, hey, just, you know, give it a go, do it, you know, you're used to it, whatever. It's just really, it is that quick, that moment where you just say, yeah, screw it, okay, I'll give into it. And if you can just remind yourself of why you don't want to and then do something dramatic, like you said, you know, do something sudden. I think Tony Robbins used to talk about, you know, screaming or spinning around or singing out loud a song or something.
Just to break
that state quickly as soon as you think of it. That can just help, shake that thought away. So then you can sort of push forward into the new practice. And that might, like you said, go for a jog or go for a walk or something to just get your mind off it. Because these feelings, like you said, I mean, we think they're so powerful and in control, but they really are minor when you stop to just watch them and observe them. They're not killing us, you know. It's not like they're putting us to bed. And if we can see them in that way, perhaps we can, you know, take the initiative to do something else instead of listening to them.
Yeah. And the other thing is too, Lee, I'd like to really encourage people to recognize when we are in that state where we're not making the choices that we know, you know, logically are good for us or that we going in the directions that we want to go in, we are actually in trance. So when we are in those habits, when we are in those patterns, when we are going back to those behavioral things that we're not really happy about, it's because we have literally fallen into a trance. And so sometimes doing some of those dramatic actions, it breaks your state, it shatters the trance, it wakes you up. You know, all of those things are achieved by doing something completely unpredictable. Ultimately, it does come down to us making that choice and being, you know, I often call it being my own grown up or being my own parent, because, you know, often when we're in those states, we're chucking a bit of a tanty, aren't we? Yeah. We're sort of going, life sucks, or she looked at me the wrong way, or I didn't get the raise, or my boss was angry with me, or, you know, the tomatoes didn't grow, you know, whatever it is. And so we use those old patterns and behaviors to express the fact that we're pretty peed with life or something didn't go our way. So the more often we can become aware and the more often we can change that state, the less hold it has on us. And awareness grows as you practice it. Consciousness grows as you practice it.
Yeah, and I'll attest to that because I, you know, a few years ago I had no idea what this whole consciousness awareness stuff was all about, and I heard people talking about it, so I started trying it, and it started by mindfulness, just sitting on my floor, you know, closing my eyes and just trying to observe the thoughts and focus on breath and stuff like that, and that allowed me then to have consciousness in those moments where I wanted to, you know, break away from previous habits, etc., that I didn't enjoy. And it was hard, like it took forever, and slowly things began to change, and then I'd fall back off, and then things would change again, and then I'd fall back off, until the point now where I am much more confident in my ability to see, you know, what's right and wrong in my perspectives in my life, and make those changes and be conscious of that. And I'm still not, I'm by far from perfect, but I'm getting, it's just amazing how much it can improve through that practice. And I think that's a really important point, is to just practice that awareness, practice your conscious focus and your attention on what you're doing and why you're doing it, and then bring that into every moment as much as you possibly can, and that will just grow. The more you practice it, the better it will become.
I love it. You get a big A+ in red with a big red circle and 5 gold stars, Lee, because what you've described is one of the hardest things that we need, that we you know, have the option to do in our lives. And the reality is that many people choose not to exercise that discipline. You know, I'm guilty of it myself as well. I still have, you know, days where I'm throwing the 2-year-old tanty here and there, or I'm a bit annoyed about something, or, you know, or worse. And it's coming back to and putting back in place those things that we know support us to move in the direction we want to go, that, you know, you deserve a great big pat on the back. But I'm not going to give you a hug because you're naked, apparently. So,
no, I think it's you know, it leads us back to that point of why you want to do it and what it's all about for you. What's your vision? What's your story? And you're really making that connection. And then you're just reminding yourself, and because I found it so many times in my experience, and probably yourself included, where we just say, "Oh, screw it," you know, it's just too hard, and I just want to give up. Because the conditioned state of our being, which is in our neurological network and our makeup, it's hard to reverse. But you can do it. You absolutely can do it. And I just, like, you know, I just think, don't give up. Just keep going. If that's really what you believe and you want something different, then go for it. Because for me, nothing's more important than just living this life as fully as you possibly can. And it doesn't mean, you know, going after the paychecks or the promotions or all that rubbish. It just means living life as best you can. Because at the end of the day, it's all going to be over at some mm-hmm. point. We don't know when that point is going to come. So why not just wake up and live it how you live it? And I think that's the passion. That's my inspiration. That's my motivation to get out of bed every morning. And that's my motivation to keep challenging myself as hard as it might be to keep pushing forward in the direction I want to go. And whether I'll get there or not, I don't know. But I think there's possibility there. I think there's that chance, that opportunity for all of us.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned that word why, and, you know, the program is the hidden why. And I think the other thing that I would really encourage people to do is to keep putting things in front of themselves that really reinforce that.
Yeah.
So whatever it might be for you, and it can be very, very different for every single person, but what are you doing to, you know, I mentioned this before, build those platforms that allow you to continue to dip into the emotion of your why. Build those things around you, those resources that enable you to just sit in your why, whatever your why is, giving it to your brain and your body to reconnect to it. Because part of what we fail to do is give ourselves the good stuff. We sit often in our doubt, in our judgment, in our sense of helplessness or hopelessness, in our anxiety and in our stress. And what we fail to do on many, many occasions is actually give ourselves and put ourselves into those resource states that make us stronger, happier, more passionate, more joyful, and more connected to our life and our, you know, what we're creating for our future. So, you know, have those things around you. For example, I know that I need to be out in nature for me to feel really connected to myself and really connected to my purpose. And when I do that, I'm more focused, I'm more energetic, I feel more in control and more joyful about what it is that I'm creating. So whatever that might be for you, give that to yourself. Spend time in it.
Yeah, you make a good point. I don't think we do enough of that. We seem to forget about that, those things that are important to our life, and we just don't incorporate them. And I think you need to schedule those first.
Yes.
And you look at some of the most successful people, eh? And they're like, I heard Richard Branson on a podcast the other day, and I knew of this, but, you know, he makes sure he schedules the first thing in the morning and the end of the day, the exercise. So he plays a good game of tennis, he says, at the start and the finish of each day, or sails his yacht, you know, around his island. And, yeah, mm-hmm. these are privileges that we don't all have, but there's mm-hmm. certain things. Like, I know if I get up and do my half an hour of yoga or half an hour jog, it's going to be a foolproof day. It's going to really make a big difference. If I don't, then there can be some trouble. But, you know, you obviously can manage that as you get into practice if you miss a day. But really, for me, it's a must do on my list now. And those things, I think, are really important, those platforms to taking care of ourselves.
That's it. Really, so important. Find out what they are. Find out what lights you up. Find out what, you know, reconnects you to your life and do more of it.
What do you recommend there? I mean, I always say, you know, write a list down, you know, of all the things that you love in your life and how much you do of them each day and what you could do more of, you know. So just start by sitting down with a bit of paper and just writing a list of 10, 20 to 50 things that you love and saying, okay, am I doing these? And think about, you know, the health of these things that you love, because obviously there's things perhaps that we love that aren't good for us. So try and focus on the things that are good for us, that are healthy, that are going to lighten you up and really spark that motivation, that inspiration, that curiosity, that love for your life.
Yeah. And then schedule them in the same way that you would schedule in your most important appointment with a client, yep, or your most important appointment with your boss, or your most important, you know, appointment with your doctor, for example.
Yep.
Schedule those things in as though they are just as valuable, because the reality is they're actually more valuable to you in the way that you're experiencing your life than any of the other things that you might have going on.
Mm.
So sometimes this means, you know, getting up at 5 to do your exercise or your meditation or whatever it is. Sometimes it means going to bed at 8:30 so that you've got time to read your books that you love for an hour. And again, this is where we have to take responsibility for where we're portioning up our day, because we all have the same amount of time in our day. Some people tend to, or some people get a lot more done than others of us. And it's because they have, you know, greater time management skills, or they've just, educated themselves to be able to do that. But we can all do that to one extent or another. So I agree with you. Make a list of the things that you love. And if you're really stumped and you can only come up with 3, just do those 3. And over time, other things will actually reveal themselves. Or if you can't even come up with 1, sit down and think about when you were a child, and you can go back as far as you like, what do you remember doing that you really enjoyed?
Yeah.
And it could have been, I don't know, playing with a doll. Well, maybe you need to find some kind of a craft that you can do, or maybe that time just symbolized real downtime for you. Maybe you need to schedule in absolute downtime. Maybe you liked drawing. So why don't you get yourself an adult coloring book and some pencils and schedule in, you know, 15, 20, half an hour, however long you can make that possible, and have that be a new part of your reality in your life.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I've got this personal story for you, if it's okay for me to share,
yeah,
Lee.
Yeah, absolutely.
I had been trying to incorporate meditation into my life for a really, really long time. And the person that I was working with said, Linda, just do 5 minutes. Just 5 minutes. Everybody's got 5 minutes. Well, do you think I could find 5 minutes? I could not find 5 minutes. And the reason that I couldn't find 5 minutes is because in my mind, 5 minutes was not significant. So everything could get forgotten,
yeah,
in 5 minutes. So instead, when I recognized that this is what the little game that I was playing with myself, very clever we are at playing the games within our own mind,
yeah,
I decided, right, I'm going to schedule an hour, a full hour. I had to make it really significant so that I would get it done. And I tell you what, Lee, it transformed my life.
Wow. That's a really good point too. And you know, it's just a nice way to just experiment with the things too, because we're all so different in that. And we all hear this advice and practices and techniques, but really take it on board. But then just, you know, figure it out yourself and how it works best with you so you can incorporate these things. And I think that's a really good example of that.
I think also one of the other things we don't do is forgive ourselves for all the ways that we think we've failed.
Yeah.
You know, we are the first person to really have a go at ourselves, and it's more common than not that we are actually the people that are saying the meanest and most nasty things to ourselves. So you know, getting off your high horse with the whip and continuing to beat yourself up about the things that you should have, could have, you know, didn't, and practicing a little bit of compassion and forgiveness, and then putting the tools in place.
Yeah, and the more I think about it and the more I sort of proceed, is I think it really comes down to the focus of the self. The more we focus on ourself, the more it just drives us down, and we have to get away,
yes,
from the focus of self.
I agree, because, you know, if you're talking to yourself, sometimes you can have the best conversations, but more often than not, what you tend to do is go down the little rabbit hole of your mind, and I've got one as well, and we come up with all the reasons why we can't, why we shouldn't, why we didn't, and we get lost down there. And you have to kind of step away from that thinking and just find a way to observe yourself, and then, you know, with loving compassion, get yourself back on track.
It comes back to that mindfulness, yeah. I think, you know, the self-importance thing, you know, we're always beating ourselves up, which causes us suffering or pain when we do that, based on the focus of this self-importance, or we're trying to, you know, chase and pursue pleasures because we think we're so important, and that sort of just becomes a constant cycle of nothingness as well. You know, it sounds very negative.
I agree.
I agree. I just find that's what causes me a lot of my angst and anxiety and stress. Is just that focus on the self. So if I just let go and realize, hey, it's not, I'm not important, you know.
Or in the scheme of the entire universe, if you take those emotions and you make it bigger than the universe, they just pop and fade away.
Yeah.
And then what we do is we realize, well, it's insignificant, really. Easy to say, harder to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, that's practice makes perfect again. Not that there's anything like perfect. The other thing is too, who are we connecting to in our lives that actually values the same thing that we do? Because if we're constantly comparing ourselves to someone else, no matter who that might be or what it is that we believe they've attained in their life, if we're constantly putting ourselves in a situation where we're surrounded by people who don't actually share what it is that we value, then we're always going to be sitting in judgment or sitting in bad feeling around ourselves and our experiences and our life. So, you know, if you're a vegan, hang out with vegans.
Yeah.
If you're a minimalist, hang out with minimalists. if you got racehorses, hang out with other people who've got racehorses. I don't know. I'm just, you know, making stuff up. But the
power of the influence of that group, you know, because of our wantingness to belong is huge. Yes.
And also what it does is it really supports the choices that we're making in our lives, right? So if you've made a commitment that you want to be vegan, for example, and you only hang out with meat eaters, what are the chances of you really holding on to that without becoming a bitter, twisted, angry person?
Yeah.
So, you know, surround yourself with people who are going to honor your choices and support you when you fall off. And you know, love you back into what they know is a greater vision of you and what you're actually committed to.
It's funny you mentioned vegan, because I've recently, I'm not a full vegan, but recently I've pretty much gone vegan, except for I love sushi, so we still go out for sushi on Sunday.
Yeah,
most Sundays, yeah. And that's pretty much it. Yeah. You know, we tend to steer clear from the dairy and stuff like that, but the only reason why that came about is because I started listening to Rich Roll podcast, and he's a vegan, and that's what he promotes on his show. And I didn't tune in to become a vegan or anything like that by any stretch of the imagination. I tuned in because I loved some of the initial conversations that I heard about these inspiring people doing amazing things, and I wanted to be a part of that inspiration and positivity. And then just through listening to his podcast, something obviously sunk within, and I started going, yeah, you know, I don't want this. And I grew up, my father owned a steakhouse, so, man, I love, you know, big steaks. So... it's still a hard thing to conceptualize, and it's still weird when I look at meat and go, oh, you know, I don't really want to eat that anymore.
That's interesting.
The power of the groups, yeah. That's a really good point.
It's the power of the groups, and I think it's also one of a beautiful example of how our direction in life can change just by staying open and curious, right? So the next person might have heard exactly the same podcast or webinar or whatever it was and gone, nah, that doesn't really speak to me. But at least they were there opening their mind to the options and the possibilities. And I really encourage anyone who's listening to the show, just be curious. Find out what else might be out there, because you never know, you might become a vegan.
And that's a good reason to listen to this podcast, because that's my premise. I love to be open and curious, and that's why I see such a wide variety of people on the show. And in all seriousness, that's why, because I love to just assess things and figure things out. And hey, what's your perspective on things? Because it helps me understand a bit better. And I don't agree with everything that everyone says. But, you know, we pick and choose, and it just helps. So, Linda, it's been an amazing conversation, a lot to unpack there. So hopefully the listeners got a fair bit out of it. I certainly have, and I really enjoyed the conversation. I have a few questions that I want to ask you before we wrap things up. You got a few more moments?
Go for it.
The first question I want to ask you is, what are your rituals or routines that you believe contribute to your success?
Okay, well, exercise is definitely mine, because it clears my mind and clears my body. I am a yoga fanatic, so that's my thing that I do.
Yoga. Man, I just love yoga too now. I started last year and I said, I'm going to commit to this. And I went from beginner and now I'm intermediate doing all these weird twisting.
Oh, good on you.
And it's really cool. It's really cool. Again, the practice, hey? But
exactly.
Yoga. So yoga is your thing. Cool.
Well, what I find is that because I'm so, you know, intent on not, you know, breaking a, you know, snapping a tendon or, you know, having an ankle go sideways, or just, you know, breathing through a pose, I don't have time to think. And so for me, that is absolute bliss time.
Mm, yeah, I like it. And, yeah, really good routine to put in anyone's day, I think.
For sure.
What advice would you give your 20-year-old self?
Oh, God. Oh, my good. How much time have we got? All right.
We're just going back a few years, right, Linda?
Exactly. Only a couple, actually. All right. Do not sweat the small stuff. Oh, my goodness. I used to give myself all kinds of conniptions, just worrying about what other people think and being fearful of that rather than really, really connecting to, well, what am I passionate about and what do I want to achieve? So that would be what I would talk about to my 20-year-old self.
Yep. So someone out there now that is, you can see that they're just always getting stressed and overworked up about the small stuff, what would you tell them to get away from that?
One is, you know, start to develop your perspective. You know, I'm assuming that they would be living in a reasonably, you know, safe place to be able to be having these kinds of small anxieties. So get out there in the world and see what's really going on, and your life will be transformed because what you're experiencing is so tiny compared to the capacities that you actually have to embrace your life.
Mm, yeah, good point. Sometimes it takes to look what others are going through and what the world's going through.
For sure.
Put things into perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Really good point. What is your meaning of success?
Oh, my meaning of success. Okay, my meaning of success is definitely to be able to have enough to contribute to others and make a choice on when I work and when I play. And it would definitely be the ability to be generous as well, actually, because that to me suggests that I have more than enough, and that to me is success.
Yeah. Goes back to that contribution, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What is one piece of productivity advice you could share?
Oh, know where your energy flows, what you are good at, and outsource everything else when you possibly can. And I know that that sounds like, again, easier said than done, and this happens over a period of time. But, you know, what I can get done if somebody else is pruning my garden that gives me joy and gives them joy, because they only choose people who love what they do. But imagine if we were all walking around doing what we love. How incredible would that be?
And you know what? I think we can. And just to this point, you've just given me this clarity. But I think we often think of when we hear someone say outsource the things that you don't want to do or don't have the time to do so you can focus on what you love.
Mm.
Yes, we don't all have the capacity to hire assistants and garden manicurers, etc. But mm-hmm. Here's what I can say. To outsource things also means to just get rid of it. You know, don't worry about it. Don't do it. Screw it. Who cares what the neighbour thinks about your unmanicured lawns? And that will allow you to focus on what you love, and that will bring you more to life than stressing about the pile of laundry in your laundry because your mother-in-law is coming around for the weekend or whatever. Just a couple of examples I'm familiar with. But
no, I totally, you know, totally agree.
It, get rid of it.
Yep.
And that way you can focus on what you love and what's important in life. And I think that's really
exactly
important.
Mm. When I had my babies, something was going to give, and I made the decision that it was either me or the house, and the house had to give. So the place looked like a bomb site for about 5 years, but my children were happy, and so was I.
Yeah, really important. What advice would you give someone else? And you've given a lot of advice on this today already, but what one thing would you give someone else looking to make some change in their life?
So, yeah, it really does come back to the why, Lee. You know, okay, so you've decided you want to make a choice. Just get really, really clear on why it is you've even reached that point, and then build those resources that will continue to remind you why it's so important that you stay on track. And, you know, if that includes, wording friends and family up, that they have your permission to step in and remind you, or they have your permission to make you accountable and to remind you of your why, then do those things as well. You don't have to do it all on your own. That's the other thing that I would say. If you share it with people, you will find the wonderful thing about friends and family is that they do have the capacity to step in and actually be your champion when you feel like you can't be.
Yeah. Let them in too, you know, let them in because they're there, they exist. I've got a mate who's I let in and he's been my health advocate, which I would have otherwise paid millions for, I think.
And imagine the gratitude and the joy and what a contribution you are to him because you've allowed him to share his passion with you.
Hmm.
So, you know, we think we're being selfish, but often we're being selfish when we don't let other people in.
And that's how he'd describe himself too. I'm just selfishly looking out for you because I want you to be around here for my old age.
Gorgeous. So. I love that. That's beautiful.
What's your favourite food?
Hummus.
Hummus?
Yeah. It goes with everything.
Okay.
So, you know, veggies. It goes with everything. Toast, eggs, love it.
Hummus. I think I just discovered yesterday the hummus is also a term used for decomposing leaves that feed the garden beds of our forests.
Yes, and yeah, it is. So people say it differently. Hummus, you know, clearly have an Australian accent, but I'm sure that there's people in the Middle East, for example, that would have a much more beautiful rendition of that word. but yes, so it's interesting. I don't know what the connection is there, Lee, but hey, it makes for a good story.
Food for the soul, baby.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Well done.
What's your favourite leisure activity?
Reading.
Favourite book?
No, I've only got a favourite genre.
Okay.
So my genre is fantasy fiction. And that is my absolute escape. So anything that has a spell associated with it, I'm there.
What's a non-fiction book that you've read recently that you'd like to recommend?
Oh, okay. So if we're looking for resources and amazing things, then I highly recommend Dr. Joe Dispenza, Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. Incredible.
Okay. I'll put that in there.
Yep.
In the links. I'll put your book in there too. You've got a book.
I do have a book. It's called Stress Made Easy, Peeling Women Off the Ceiling. It's also for men. I do stress that. It's really about the work that I don't have time or the grounding philosophy behind the work that I do when I'm in session with individuals or groups that you often don't have time to actually explain to people, and I really wanted people to have a resource so that they could understand the way that their mind works and then work backwards from there to be able to make change in their lives. So that's what the book's about.
Yeah, good one. So good for men and women to unlock those barriers of stress and get past it. What do you have a favorite quote?
Oh gosh, no. I don't hold on to things like that. It's interesting. I actually have one on my website. If anyone's interested, www.drlindawilson.com. It's about a journey. Can't remember what it is, but, yeah, can't help you with that one, Lee.
That's all right. I'll stick it in the show notes. I'll look for it and find out what that quote is.
And, thank you.
I'll try and see it there. But, yeah, check out her website too, guys. It is there. Linda, do you believe we all have a why?
I believe we do, but I think that for many people it's about actually discovering what that is.
Yeah.
I don't think we instinctively know. It's a part of a journey. It's a part of a process. It's a part of us maturing into ourselves, and often we can take some time to do that.
Yeah, we have to discover it. Okay, and what does living life with passion and purpose mean to you?
Ultimately, it means that I must be connected emotionally to what I'm actually spending my time doing. So if I don't have a real reason or a real emotional connection to what it is that I'm creating or what it is the ways that I'm making a contribution, then that's not me living with passion.
Well, awesome conversation. What do you reckon?
I think we're just about there. I just put an underline under the word curiosity?
Be curious, people.
Yeah.
Be curious. Remain curious.
Remain curious.
That's good. Good advice. Thank you, Linda.
My absolute pleasure. Let's do it again.
Let's do it. Guys, check it all out, thehiddenwhy.com. This is my interview with Linda Wilson, Dr. Linda Wilson, and you can check out her show notes and the links at thehiddenwhy.com as well. So connect with her, say g'day, and let's do it again, Linda. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Till next time, peace, passion, and purpose. See you soon. As long as we are asleep and unaware, we may never wake up to our true purpose in life. The Ultimate Life Map will assist you in defining your life compass. It will help you understand the fundamental life principles so you can purposefully navigate your way towards living a life with greater freedom, fulfillment, and happiness. Guys, that is what my book, The Ultimate Life Map, is all about. Stop teasing yourself. Wake up. The life you desire is more possible than you believe. Align your thoughts and behaviors with your values, with what truly matters to you. The ultimate life isn't lived by aligning ourselves to societal expectations or external demands and measures. Those paths lead us into traps of acceptance, stagnations, and conformity. Break free from the status quo. Question everything. Ask why. The ultimate life is available for anyone, those that are willing to create the change that they desire. Are you ready to wake up? I've been working on this book for some time, guys. It's a project I am passionate about and very excited about getting it published and launched. And in launching it, I'm committed to raising enough funds in which I will be donating 100% of all the profits towards completing a schooling project in Uganda. This will give approximately 500 children the opportunity to attend school and create a better life for themselves. If you're interested in finding out more, guys, supporting this campaign, and even getting a copy of my book, head on over to theultimatelife.com and subscribe today.